Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Inspired Evolution, a show dedicated to helping you actually live the life that you love. I'm your host, Amrit Sandhu, international speaker, global coach, and loving podcaster. As a gift for tuning into this podcast, I have something really special just for you. My premium short course, which can teach you how to meditate in just 7 days, you can download it now at www.inspiredevolution.com/learn. That's www.inspiredevolution.com/learn. Learn how to meditate in just 7 days. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this powerfully insightful conversation. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss any of the latest episodes, launching every Monday, designed to help you live the life you love and keep you inspired to evolve. I think it's all angels just walk by. Welcome to the Inspired Evolution, and it is an absolute treat to be here today. We have with us Dr. Patrick Gentempo. Patrick, how are you, brother?
I'm doing fantastic. How about you?
Yeah, man, I'm doing great. An absolute pleasure, and doing better for having you here today.
Thank you.
Alrighty, so for those tuning in to Patrick for the first time, get ready, sit down, grab a cuppa, or if you're driving, don't, like, hopefully you're already sitting down, but don't go grab that cuppa. Stay focused on the road. So Patrick is a serial entrepreneur who has founded and led multiple million-dollar companies, right? Early in his career, he was practicing as a chiro. He developed diagnostic technologies for which he received multiple patents with decades of experience, having founded and co-founded over 15 businesses. Man, ranging from all things like diagnostics all the way through to something like filmmaking, right? So he has a specialized skill, which is what we're going to talk about today, in the practical application of philosophy. Now, he applies that to business. He's been published by Forbes, has testified in front of Congress on the use of technology in healthcare. He's given testimony to the White House Commission on complementary and alternative medicines, and he's received numerous business and healthcare awards. Dude, there is so many places we could go with this particular podcast. But the key place I want to start, and I just want to dive in, put on the rubber gloves and just go there with you. Mm. Practical versus theoretical philosophy and living a philosophical approach to life. For those tuning in, this was totally and wholly inspired by Patrick Duffy's epic TED Talk. Please go check it out. I'll put it in the show notes for you guys to go check it out. And it was one of those times where I listened to a TED talk and it was just like every few sentences, I was like, yes, 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 yes. And I was just getting more and more into it. And I was like, yes, this is speaking to my soul. And the crux in there was, you know, there's theoretical philosophies, but then there's practical philosophies. And I should probably shut up and let you do some talking on that.
Well, first of all, let me just say thanks for having me. Secondly, thank you for your smile. It's inspiring and contagious. So that makes it all fun. So thanks for that.
Thank you.
Yeah. So philosophy. So I'm, and that's why people like I'm introduced very often as a philosopher, and I am, but I'm a practical philosopher, not an academic philosopher, and they are very different things. So do I have some knowledge of kind of the history and systems of philosophy? And, you know, do I understand, you know, Kant and Plato and Aristotle and so on? Yeah, but not like, you know, a PhD philosopher would have in an academic setting. I visited those realms because I find it intellectually stimulating. But what I'm really interested in is how philosophy can become a tool for success in life. And that's the practical application of philosophy. And it's a very different thing and it's a very different experience. So I start out by saying typically that everybody has a philosophy. Anybody, you who are listening to this right now, you have a philosophy. So you have no choice about that fact. The only choice you have, to kind of paraphrase Ayn Rand, the philosopher, is whether or not you defined it in a conscious, rational, in disciplined way, or let it accumulate like a junk heap in your subconscious. And most people, you know, are walking around that way. And I'm not trying to degrade, you know, people in general, as far as saying, you know, that if they haven't done work in the practical application of philosophy, that they're, you know, there's some kind of an ethical judgment around that. There's not. What I am saying though, is that many people are finding themselves in positions of, being self-defeating, exasperation, cyclic cycles of destruction where they start to make progress and then they kind of self-immolate or self-destruct. And they can't understand why. And they many times will ascribe these challenges to something that might be more mystical in their own mind, like, you know, luck. You know, things of that nature, or you're being born under a bad sign or whatever it might be. But the reality is that I think it's something much more tangible than that, and something that, you know, that is fixable. So what got me started on this path, and I think this one philosophical premise sent me on my way of practicality, or the applied practicality of philosophy, was from Ayn Rand. And I think maybe you probably know who Ayn Rand is. She wrote the book Atlas Shrugged, which he's probably best known for, The Fountainhead. But she's got a lot of nonfiction work and a lot of lectures and other things that I studied. And her intellectual heir was Nathaniel Brandon, who was my mentor. So that, but I sought him out because of who he was and my work in this realm. But what Rand said is that when you have contradictions in your basic philosophical premises, the only possible result is destruction, and the amount of destruction is relative to the level of that contradiction. So I that struck me immediately as truth when I heard it the first time. And I started, and the practicality of it was glaringly obvious to me, because I said, so that means if I can identify contradictions in my life and solve them, I'm going to evolve. And it turned out to be true. So every time I started to, you know, utilize philosophy as a tool and identify where I might have had contradictions in my values and my metaphysical premises and my the branch of philosophy known as epistemology, my theory of knowledge, you know, how do I know things? As I could start to examine that, and I can see conflict or contradiction in those realms, if I can resolve those contradictions, then I can evolve to the next level. And so I started doing that on a personal level effectively. And then with my entrepreneurial efforts, I started to apply that to business, and found that in business, it was staggering what the application of philosophy could do there.
I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that. One of the things I want to drop in around is, can you unpack a little bit like the contradictions and the destruction piece there? Because I think I can tell how much you've shared this before, because it's really tight the way you've described it. But I think there's a whole rabbit hole there. Can you describe like potentially what some of the contradictions look like, and then potentially how that leads to destruction?
Sure. So for example, let me just say this. Nobody is contradiction free.
Damn it.
Yeah, exactly.
I was hoping by the end of this episode.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that would be the perfect human. And maybe in religious circles, they can ascribe that to specific historical characters. But in general, you know, us mere mortals, There's no such thing as anybody who's, again, this is my lens that I look through. There's no such thing as anybody that's 100% contradiction free. So,
oh, can I just take a quick, sorry, just to take a quick punch at that in there. There's a book that I've got here. It's called The Difficulty of Being Good. And it actually is dedicated to the Mahabharata, which is an old Indian sacred text. And it's like talks about all the avatars in the story. And these are stories of the gods. Mm. And all the gods, the difficulty of being good is that each person has a boon. Each avatar has a boon. But with that boon comes a certain curse. Mm. Right, because if you're all focused towards one direction, then there's going to be certain things that are left like wanting, let's just call it that. And so I hear what you're saying in terms of like, even in the design of the gods, you know, and the interplay between each other, it's like this beautiful story where everybody's trying to do good, but with a different intention. And it's like, yeah, there's those certain bits. So we're not all perfect. Yeah.
And what I love the fact that you raise that in the context of this particular conversation, because I think being contradiction free 100%, you would be boring, or, you know, or as the old saying might go, you know, once you're ripe, you start to rot. So you know, it's good to say that there's always something to aspire to. There's always some new thing to learn, some new thing to experience, and we can keep going to higher levels of that. And the idea of saying, okay, well, you know, that's over would be sort of a sad experience. So you know, so and why that's important is that we shouldn't self-deprecate because we, you know, we have contradictions. It's like saying, okay, no, I am somebody now who wants to live consciously, mindfully, in a way that can allow me to observe myself, to clarify certain things about me. And as a consequence, I can learn and grow and become a better version of me as I identify and resolve contradictions. And on a systemic level with, you know, let's say a business where you have multiple people at work in a business, to me, the whole idea of a business in giving it a soul is giving it its philosophy, which means knowing its values, knowing its purpose, understanding its vision, getting those things clarified, not as like a weekend exercise that gets thrown in the drawer when you're done, but literally becomes the heartbeat and the soul of the business. And when you are operating in alignment with that, you know, with those values, when the business is and everybody in it is, then magic happens, extraordinary things happen. And when there's contradictions between the way the business operates versus what its values are, that's when you have destruction and business starts to fail. So it is, but it's, and there's always things to work out, always higher level evolution. So just the, maybe some examples, you know, I've done a lot of work because I'm a chiropractor and I spent a lot of years running, you know, fairly large scale businesses within the chiropractic profession, where we had diagnostic technologies and training and business training and so on. So some of the examples that can come from that I think are obvious to anybody is I would have chiropractors who would say they have a practice that I'd say, what are your values? What's the purpose of the practice? We want to do lifetime family wellness care. Tell me your philosophical premises. What's your view of reality? Well, the body is self-healing and self-regulating in its nature. The nervous system is the master system and controller of that body. So those are two what we'd call axioms, philosophically, metaphysical views that are pretty much self-evident. And so it would stand the reason that if we, and now we're going to that branch that I call epistemology, theory of knowledge, which would be deduction. So we say if the body is self-healing and self-regulating, which it is, and if the nervous system is the master system and controller of that body, which it is, then it would stand the reason deductively that if you interfere with nervous system function, you must necessarily interfere with the ability for the body to heal and regulate. So if that's the position you hold, and you say, okay, so now given that that's my view of reality philosophically, then what's the purpose of this practice? What would it value? And then you start to say, well, it would value being able to assess the nervous system, to find interference, to adjust these things. In chiropractic, we talk about this thing called subluxation, which is literally a distortion in the patterns of the spine that interfere with the function of the nervous system. And therefore, there's less expression of life and less ability to heal and all that kind of stuff. So what do we want to do? We want to identify those subluxations and we want to remove them. And then by doing so, the person can heal, regulate, and have more life expression. So that's a view. That's one philosophical view. And a lot of people might disagree with it, But let's say that that's the view that a particular chiropractor has. Now, you can match this to mm-hmm. any business. They have premises about a view of reality. Therefore, it translates into the values that the business will have. And then that leads to their purpose, which are the actions that they take on those values and premises. And what happens, mm-hmm. many people start with purpose, but purpose emerges from that third branch of philosophy, which is ethics. You have to start before that and lead to that purpose. So my point here, though, is that this particular chiropractor, I'm using as an example, did all that thinking, developed all that philosophy, came out with their purpose, which was a vitalistic thing in nature to address subluxation, because the other version of chiropractic is back and neck pain, meaning all we do is look to manipulate particular painful areas of the spine for the purposes of, I use the term ameliorate symptoms, reduce symptoms.
Symptom relief.
Yeah, symptom relief. And that's fine. And I'm not, and if that's your philosophical view and you built to that and that's the purpose of the practice, I'm not morally judging it one way or the other. But this chiropractor who had the version I spoke about first comes to me and I'm at a conference. I just got done speaking and they're like, you know, I'm frustrated. My practice is stuck. It doesn't grow. I can't get past a certain point and I don't understand why. I understand everything you just lectured on. And it's the way that I see it and, you know, the way that I feel about it. And then he said, well, you know, I'm kind of busy. Hand me a card and maybe we can follow up and have a conversation. And the person hands me a card and it says XYZ Back and Neck Pain Center.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And now I looked at the card and I looked at them and I said, wait a minute, you're calling your practice Back and Neck Pain Center? And they were like, yeah. And I said, do you see how that's a complete contradiction to your entire philosophy you just told me? The way that you go to market with your brand is in contradiction to your values and your purpose in the practice. That's why you're stuck. Get these two things aligned and you will evolve to the next level of the practice. And then you'll start to see a breakthrough happen, et cetera, which is exactly what happens. And I've literally helped thousands of chiropractors move through that type of a process, as well as other businesses. So, you know, to give you, an example, that's just one example of a glaring contradiction where somebody is behaving in their life in contradiction to what their values and beliefs are.
Mm. Thank you so much for sharing that. I really appreciate that. And that, pardon me, that probably ties into some of the, you wrote a book called Your Brand is Your Stand, or Your Stand is Your Brand.
Your stand is your brand. Exactly.
Yeah. I got it right the second time around. Pardon me. And we'll put a link to that in the show notes too, for those that want to check it out. And is that what I'm hearing in there as well, which is basically what you're standing for, make that everything that is, you know, integrity through the way out. And I find it really remarkable. I feel like with the age that we live in, with the digital age as well, I think, you know, oftentimes I think there was a different time way back when, potentially when we would be able to buy into a product without really understanding the values and the ethics of the founder or the CEO. But I think with the transparency that the internet has now afforded us, we're going down this path where it's like Elon Musk could create, you know, he created a flamethrower. Now, if someone else created a flamethrower, I'd be like, what is going on here? Like, I don't know if that's safe, but he creates a flamethrower. I'm like, that's cool. Why? Because Tesla's cool. Why is that? Because creating a vertical trucking company to Mars is cool. So I feel like, you know, in this day and age, we're buying into the philosophies and the values of the leaders that are there potentially, so that we can actually follow into whatever that then they, you know, subsequently go and create, because we understand the person behind it. And potentially that has come from, you know, I'm just skeptical here, so pardon me if this is incorrect, but I believe it's got to do with, you know, probably having had corrupt companies in the past, where now with the transparency the internet affords us, it's like, well, I would like to connect and understand what is going through in terms of that alignment with this company all the way from the top down. I find it quite remarkable. Tell us a little bit about, you know, your stand, because also, like, you could stand for so many different things. I find that as being one of the biggest challenges in the Inspired Evolution. I'm passionate about clean waterways. I'm passionate about reforestation. I'm passionate about people's mental health. But it's like, how do you find your stand, you know, and make that your brand? Yeah.
So first thing relative to that is that I believe that a premise, a philosophical premise that many people and businesses adopt, erroneously adopt, is that they find a contradiction between the moral and the practical. And basically, if you are saying, well, this is the moral thing to do, but from a business perspective, it's impractical. Mm. So if you find that you have a contradiction between the moral and the practical, for example, saying, well, we understand our care about the environment, but deforestation, you know, yes, morally we agree with it, but it's not practical for us to be able to run our business and have that as a consideration for the way our business needs to operate. Now the person sitting in that position would say, well, then you have a contradiction between the moral and the practical. And I'll explain where the implications of that in a moment. Or somebody who basically, let's say that you're a restaurant owner and you're a chef owner of a restaurant, and you have a strong position about corporate, farmed animals, and you see the horrific implications of of cows and pigs, that are raised in this sort of confined corporate way, mass produced, et cetera. And the impact for, let's talk, the animals is one thing. And then of course, the impact on the environment, all these things have trickle down effects. Mm-hmm. Now, it might not mean that you're a vegetarian necessarily, because you might say, hey, pet local farmers who do grass fed, blah, blah, blah. So I'm not trying to make an argument for, vegetarianism versus, meat eaters, et cetera. But what I am saying is that you might say that, but you'd say, geez, but my restaurant, I have to buy the supply of meat from those types of places and serve it. Mm-hmm. And you might think that, morally, I agree that this is a bad thing, but practically, this is the way for my restaurant to function. When you have a contradiction between the moral and the practical, basically, you have two choices. You can either be practical, but immoral, or you can be moral, but impractical. Which one of those would you like to choose? Obviously, the answer is neither. I mean, you're basically saying you can be a liar or a sucker. Which would you prefer to be? And so none of those are an appropriate state of affairs. So when you're taking a stand, what you're saying is, I understand what my values are. Mm. And that's a whole exercise in and of itself, to clarify your values and make sure you don't have contradictions in those. And, that's that's a process that's very, very important for a human being as an individual and for every single business that's out there. But now, once you have those values, you can't start to think in terms of, well, it's, I forget the value, I'm going to violate it because this is a very practical thing to do. Another way to sort of say this, and this is whenever I've had the toughest times in businesses, whenever I've had businesses fail, and, I've started a lot of businesses, they don't all work. And I've done extremely well in many businesses and built them to scale and been able to exit them. And I've also had, failures where, I've lost millions of dollars of my own money in the business. That's a part of the game. My friend Rick Sapio calls it tuition. But but the bottom line is I can say pretty clearly upon reflection that the times when things went bad for me is when I took opportunity over values. So one of my premises, that I live by and stay very consciously aware of is never take opportunities over values. I don't care how good an opportunity it is. If it is conflicting with your values, it's not a good opportunity for you. It will never be sustainable. It will never be something that will work out spiritually or financially.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because it's not actually poisonous, but it's poisonous for you, right? Because it's
it's amoral until it has a reference point, right?
Yeah. Please.
So having said that, an example I can give of this is, and this is a restaurant I write a lot about in my book, because I write about brand purity in one of the chapters. I talk about philosophy, its branches, how to create values, all the things we're talking about. Mm. But then probably one of my favorite chapters is called Finding Your Miles Davis. And what this is about is saying, okay, what's the purest form of you? Really digging deep, because what I believe is that there's this, you call it a soul, call it a pure form. There's a lot of noise around what word you use, but just say that there's a pure, unadulterated version of you, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't, in philosophy, they talk about, are you born innately with certain characteristics or are you tabula rasa, which would be the blank slate? And I used to think in terms of tabula rasa, but I'm too old now to think that way anymore. I know that there, and I've got kids. So I believe that there's an innate identity called you. And what happens through our lives is that we have things that happen, things we learn from our mothers, fathers, teachers, preachers, things that have happened to us, bad things that we've done. And this starts to create energetic fields of distortion between that, what's inside of you. And then as you start to express from there, it gets distorted through these experiences. And then what actually comes out into the world is something that's a distorted representation of who you are. So I think a really good exercise is to try to go back and figure out what is that pure state of me and understand who that person is by identity, and identity is a whole, I'm writing a whole book on that now. It's a very complex.
Yeah. Mother, great topic. Yeah.
And then secondly, how can I identify and then perfectly express that and not allow it to get distorted out into the world? And so I call that finding your Miles Davis, because what was Miles Davis known for? Whatever was in his soul was what came out of that trumpet. It was completely, he was the purest musician that expressed himself completely. So I write in the Finding Miles Davis chapter, I talk about a restaurant called 11 Madison Park. And for the foodies out there who understand Michelin stars, and I'm a foodie and I collect wine and all that kind of stuff. So a Michelin starred restaurant is an extraordinary thing. So there's three stars in the Michelin system. One star is an amazing restaurant. Very few restaurants get a Michelin star. Two stars, now you're in like rarefied
unicorn status.
And then there's just a small amount of three star restaurants. In the whole world, I think there's roughly 100 or less. So it is rarefied. And, New York City, 20,000 eating establishments. I think they have seven, Michelin three-star restaurants or so. And one of them, it was called 11 Madison Park. Now, 11 Madison Park was a Michelin two-star restaurant for a lot of years. And the whole Finding Your Miles Davis story comes from their journey to finally getting their third Michelin star. So I don't want to take up the whole podcast talking about that. But what I will say, this is an interesting thing, because there's the second step, because they got their third Michelin star and they did it through finding their Miles Davis. And I lay out how that happened.
Right.
Great story. The last chapter of the book is called Creative Destruction. And what it's all about is saying, okay, now that you've figured out how to build this life and build this whole business, let's talk about how to burn it all down and start over again. And why that's important, it's the phoenix. You have to be willing to dive into the flames so something more beautiful can emerge. If you stay stuck, entropy takes over. The second law of thermodynamics. You start to see disorganization, disassociation, disintegration degrades over time slowly. And what was interesting about 11 Madison Park is that they got their third Michelin star. Then a few years later, what happened? When they not only had their Michelin three-star restaurant, they got voted the number one restaurant in the entire world. Number one. So they were the best of the Michelin three stars. What did the chef owner decide to do when they got that? Shut the whole thing down for 4 months, gutted it to the core, and reinvented the whole thing again. That's creative destruction. Now, there's a reason why I'm telling the story, as you'll see in a second, because to me, it's mind blowing. Something just happened relative to this. So this was, and to give you just, and I think this is an inspiring example. He took all the metal in the kitchen, pots, pans, you know, everything that was metal, the stoves, had it all cut down, melted, and then turned it into a step. So when you step into the restaurant, you're stepping over the past and into the future, into the restaurant. And when he was interviewed about this, he said, the guy said, why, if you, not only are Michelin three star, you're the number one restaurant in the world. You get voted for I think 2017 or 18, what it was. You could ride, you could double your prices. You'll have a waiting list for a year and you can ride that for 10 years without having to do a damn thing.
A damn thing. Yeah.
And when I saw this interview, I saw the freest man in the world being unattached. Because think about when you're trying to cling on now to the number one spot, he's attached. And he just said, basically his own philosophy is, okay, we did that. Now it's time for something new. And I just saw the freest human being in the world who created the best success that he could possibly do. And he was unattached to it. And now said, let's burn it all down and let the Phoenix rise. So they reopened, and I had gone to the restaurant since they had reopened. One of the documentaries I made was a wine documentary, and I interviewed their sommelier. And you know, so then I went into the restaurant, my wife and I, and we had this fantastic meal experience there. Now what do I find out? He closes down the restaurant again, and guess what he does? He reopens it as a vegan restaurant. Now, I am astounded, impressed. And in his interview, why do you take the number one restaurant in the world? You get your Michelin three stars, you know, your number one restaurant in the world, you shut it down, then you open up something which was even better, spectacular. And now you take that and you shut it down. And he said, basically, looking at what's going on with the environment and the impact that meat eating is having on the environment, he said, I just couldn't do it anymore. So I'm now going to make, you know, vegan as beautiful and sexy like nobody's ever seen it before. Just see how his values. Now, if I were a practical person, I'd be looking at him, and let's say I'm an investor in that restaurant and I'm a shareholder, I'd be maybe grabbing him by the throat saying, hey, dude, I put a bunch of money into this business. I understand your positions, but put that aside. You can be, you see what I'm saying? This guy, his values are his values. He recognizes contradictions. He resolves those contradictions and continues to thrive by taking a stand every time he recognizes it. And I will guarantee you, without knowing, because this is a very recent event, that that restaurant is going to be waiting list, explosive, financially successful. Because somebody like that, that takes a stand, everybody's showing up. I'll give you one more example about your stand as your brand. Because here's the thing, is that middle of the road doesn't work, especially today. Unfortunately, we're in an extraordinarily polarized world. And people, you know, not taking stands end up sort of irrelevant. Businesses end up irrelevant. And I'm not telling you what the stand of the business would be, but I will say that when you're doing it for effect, meaning you're virtue signaling, but you don't really believe it, that's not going to work. That's a contradiction. So, but I could tell you there, for example, there's back in New Jersey, I just heard a story a few days ago. So there's a guy who owns a coffee house, happens to be a really good coffee house. He came here from another country. He's an immigrant, you know, living the American dream in essence, you know, built this business 7 days a week, worked real hard, et cetera. Well, a couple of weeks ago, he decided he's done with masking. Now, and I'm not here to advocate one way or the other. This is not a political statement. I'm just giving you a story of a stand. And people might disagree with the stand, and that's the whole point. He decides, I'm done with this. He says, I'm not wearing a mask anymore. My employees aren't wearing a mask anymore. Now, depending on where you live, I'm in Utah. Nobody's wearing it. You don't have to here. But New Jersey, they still had the laws there, but he decided that he's taking a stand. He's had enough. Health department shows up. You have to wear your mask. We'll shut you down. We'll do this. Go ahead. Shut me down. Arrest me. I'm done. I'm taking a stand. So in New Jersey, I happen to know that there was a gym that did that. They got a lot of publicity, national news. They rallied a lot of support. Actually backfired on them to try to shut them down, et cetera. So the officials decide to get a little clever. They said, all right, you know what? We don't want to actually make this guy a martyr, you know, because it's our cause. What we're going to do, they sent in somebody with a very popular social media following, et cetera, who went in there you know, was appalled that they weren't wearing masks, and then blasted out all over the social media about this particular coffee shop. You shouldn't go there, you, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? So they tried to take him down just through social pressure. Next morning, he wakes up to open up the coffee shop. He's got a line 3 blocks long. People are around the corner. A guy walks up and puts a $50 bill on the counter and says, I don't even drink coffee. Just give me $50 worth of anything. I just want to support you. Thank you for taking the stand that you're taking. So my, what's my point? My point isn't whether you should wear a mask or not, because people doing the other stand also attract larger crowds. It is, but it's the fact of taking a stand on your values, having conviction that will, and not possibly, it will alienate people. It's a necessary aspect of it. But also people know who you are. They know your brand now because of the stand that you've taken, and you're going to attract to you those enthusiastic evangelists that come into your life, that come into your business because of the stand that you're willing to take. So, I want to be really clear. I'm not saying, hey, just go pick a stand because you think it might be popular. I'm talking about you have to find your values, figure out what you stand for in your life. And when you're willing to take that stand, you're going to find that it's going to attract to you things and resources and business that that otherwise were never coming to you before.
I love that, Patrick. Thank you so much for the examples, brother. So how do we go about finding that in your experience? How do we connect to our values? How do we connect to, because what I'm hearing is just like, just double down on the integrity behind everything you're showing up for. Right, build your identity around your integrity, allow what you're creating to inform that, enforce that. That's your stand, right? But how, for those that are tuning in, it's like, okay, I'm inspired, but how do I really come home to finding out what my true values are, my, you know, my true purpose is, and, you know, what, yeah, how do we unpack
that? Thank you for using the word double down, or the phrase double down. and I'll explain, in case this is directly related to what you just asked. A friend of mine, entrepreneur, serial entrepreneur, 5-6 years ago, is in a very compromised financial position, and smart enough to say, I need some advice. I need some guidance. So
I need help.
Yeah, I need help. And he was willing to reach out, and he reached out to me. And I'll never forget, because we're looking on a Zoom call just like this, and it was probably Skype back then. But he said, he's explaining what's going on. He's really in a bad position, and he said, you know, I've got this opportunity in Dallas. He lived in Utah, so, but in Dallas, where they could do this and this, and I can do this. And, you know, I don't know that I agree with, you know, this, what service that they're offering and the way that they're billing for it and so on. He said, but I can, you know, I can come in there and I can impact that business through resources that I have as far as audience. And, you know, this is what they can offer me, and I can make this kind of money. And I looked at him and I just said, you're taking, I know you're in a compromised position, but now you're looking for opportunity, and you're taking opportunity over values. Something we spoke about earlier. I said, if you're asking me for advice or guidance here, here's what I'm going to tell you. Double down on purpose. You're in a tough position. You're in a compromised position. It's awkward. You're not meeting your obligations. And now you're almost, you feel like you got to go out there and hunt and kill whatever you can, whether you like it or not, you know, and I'm saying that's going to be a mistake. Double down on purpose. And he reminds me now, because at this point, all his debt is paid off. His personal income is well over $2 million a year. And he said, you know, I had a wise friend tell me some years ago to double down on purpose, and I did. He said, if I actually did that deal in Dallas, you know, I shudder to think if what would have happened if I did that. So thank you for that advice. So what's my point? And my point isn't that I'm so smart. It's just that it is important to know your values. So that's why this question is so important. How do you find your values? So there's multiple values exercises. You know, I have one in my book. You can go, if you just search them, you know, about, you know, core value exercises, you'll see different ways people do it. But in essence, the way that you, and incidentally, this is the first thing I do for any business that I start, or I've come in to help friends who have businesses when they want to get something going. And the first thing I do is I do this sort of intensive immersion process, bring in the key stakeholders and say, let's figure out what our values are. And incidentally, every single time I do that, they always have a set of values they start with.
Mm.
And I've done this dozens of times. Never once has that set of values survived the process.
Meaning with the shiny objects, Pat. Yes, come on, man.
What they told me is these values are all bullshit, right? They sound, and I said, you sound like beauty pageant, you know, contestants. So, yeah, it sounds good, you know, you're putting a smile, but it's fake. It's not, this isn't, you know, so let's really get into what your values are. So, so the long answer to your question is, a fast way to do this is that you can normally find, and again, you can search this on net, but get a sheet of, you know, values, right? Mm. And there might be, you know, 50 to 100 different values on a sheet. And just start out saying, okay, go through the sheet and circle the ones that you believe express your personal values the most. And usually you're going to have at least 20 people, you know, and it, of course, honesty, integrity, et cetera, that stuff all, you know, traditionally matters and should matter for good reason to most people. But then there's these other values that could be a little bit more different, interesting, that help define you, that help differentiate you. And you can get in and figure out what those are. Like a company I'm just working with right now, you know, it's not their number one core value, but it's their number two core value is beauty. And I'm not talking about, they're not a company in aesthetics or in makeup or anything like that. I'm talking about, this is a company in personal development that provides services to people to help them transform. But beauty is a core value for them. And there's, it's a, the sense of beauty is different than, you know, like I said, just, you know, superficial aesthetic beauty, but it sort of makes you go, hmm, that's interesting. Why? Because they see beauty in transformation, right? Mm. And a chiropractor I worked with once, who I was beating over the head because he was just stuck. He could not, he was so mechanical in the way that he was trying to identify the values. You know, what are you here for? You know, well, health and wellness and, you know, because I want to pull out a value and say, what becomes your catalyzing statement? What's that short statement that catalyzes people, you, your employees, and your, the people that you serve? They understood that this, it's different than a statement of purpose in the catalyzing statement. And this person said, and Rick Sapi was the guy who came up with that. There's a TED talk he did, or TEDx talk he did on that, if you want to get more on that. And he said, and Rick and I, you know, had businesses together, and he's a phenomenal entrepreneur. So anyway, what this guy finally came to realize is that, because he wanted a family pride, why is it important to have families come in, to take care of families together, et cetera. And he had kind of window dressing around it. But then suddenly he identified beauty as a value. And how? Because I said, you know, I'm not getting you. I'm not finding your Miles Davis, and there's a wall there. And I said, what's that on the table? I said, my journal. Right, your personal journal? Yeah, give it to me. And I pick up his journal. He gave it to me. And I'm going through and I'm looking and he's writing. It's all like art and beauty. And so none of this, because he said, oh, in business, I have to have a different frame of reference mindset. And I'm like, no, these are your values. They have to be brought into your business, you know, because you provide the service. Anyway, what he finally landed on for a catalyzing statement, which, because he could say, you're in an elevator with him. Oh, what do you do for a living? I'm a family chiropractor. Oh, okay. That's interesting. Now he came up with this statement, which literally, once he finally said it, he started crying. And I got goosebumps. I said, okay, now I know we got it. Mm-hmm. And his statement is, when I asked, what do you do? His response was, I restore the beauty in families. Deep breath. Now imagine you're in an elevator and you happen to see the guy and say, what do you do? Go, I restore the beauty in families. Oh, how do you do that? Then he can explain. See, it's so beauty wouldn't be, you know, an obvious one for a lot of people, and it might not be the right one for a lot of people, but it is for some people. It is for the people who, you know, have what I call the beauty premise in life. Mm-hmm. So the process is, you might have a set of values already started with, you know, that you, most people do if they're entrepreneurs, but now go back and examine them with a fresh set of eyes and literally just look at each of them and say, is this bullshit? Or have somebody who knows you look at them and say, are any of these inconsistent with the way that you know or understand my business or me? And then secondly, start to, you know, now start to craft and say, if you could only have three of them, which would they be? In other words, maybe you got 10, but let's get rid of the ones that aren't absolutely positively essential. And then start to creatively say, now, if you were to reimagine your business, let's say we're going to burn it all down. Give me that sheet of paper. We're lighting a match to it. We're burning it all down. I want to start over now. Okay, we looked at those and got it. Now we're diving into flames. How can something more beautifully emerge like the phoenix out of these flames that we're going to build here? And start to have conversations around these values. What do you mean by integrity? Not integrity, but what do you mean by integrity? What do you mean by honesty? What do you mean by truth? What do you mean by whatever the value is? I wanted you to write a little bit of an essay around each one of those. And then you start to say, wow, the ones that you can write really eloquently to, those are probably the right ones. And the ones that you're struggling to try to write about, those probably aren't very good ones for you. So you go through this. When I used to do these weekends, we'd call them mountaintop masterminds, come in for an immersion. I'd work with these companies. What would happen is literally we did this work, which was the brand identity work, which is values, purpose, et cetera. And then we did a war room. And you know, that was a whole SWOT analysis and all this other more practical stuff. But I had to do this first because I can't do the war room without knowing who you are first.
Without the fundamentals. Yeah. Yeah.
But I tell you, people want a plan of action, you know, in their business. And I say, no, it has to start with a plan of being. I don't know what action you should take until, you know, you have to know who to be. That's the subtitle of my book is How Deciding Who to Be, Not What to Do, Can Transform Your Business. And that's what everybody misses. They wonder, what should I do? What should I do? What should I do? It's not, the doing becomes very obvious once you understand the being. But if you don't understand the being, then you're chasing opportunity and you're not values-based and, you know, it goes off the rails. So, and we'd have to spend over half the time on this or more. And then the war room part got fast because we understood this stuff. So, so there's multiple ways to approach values, but what I could tell you is on the typical basis, most people who have a set of values that they're probably going to go away if you take this exercise seriously. And having values is the most important thing you can do for a business.
Amen. I want to drop in around that. There is a link to a training on YouTube that I coach people through their values as well. And like you said, because AMRAP purpose coaching is pretty much what I do. And it is the first thing we go into as well. And it's just fundamental. And just to give you an idea, one of the things I think I'm hearing here is my values are connection, contribution, and celebration. And now it runs in everything I do. In this podcast, I've gotten to connect to you. I'm contributing hopefully to so many people, that everyone that's tuning in, right? You get a contribution from this. Hopefully it's helping you live a richer life, and hence celebration. You're able to celebrate life that little bit harder.
I love it.
And you embody those.
So you're dead on. You embody all three of those values clearly. So you're spot on. You found your Miles Davis.
Touch wood. It was a bit of a process, but yeah, like I said, there's a process, there's a training to that. I'll link that to the show notes for those that want to tune into values as well. I love the values exercise. One of the things that you just mentioned in there that I want to again go deeper into is knowing that my values are connection, contribution, and celebration. When I first founded the Inspired Evolution, the values that I went for were health, purpose, and wisdom. Right? Because I was like, when you're healthy, you're on purpose. And that was the kind of messaging behind it. And I realized, actually, that's the messaging behind it. Absolutely. But if I get really real about it, and I've just been kind of coming home to this in the last 12 months, and I think this conversation is cementing it for me, is actually the values of the Inspired Evolution are connection, contribution, and celebration as well.
thank you for making my point.
Thank you for giving me that level of clarity and permission to really, because I've been feeling that for a while, and I've literally just gone, I think that's really what's going to happen. I've been suggesting that, you know, for more and more people, it's like, create businesses in alignment to your own personal values. If you are the founder and the CEO, right? If you're an entrepreneur, find what parts of your values line up to the organization's values. And, you know, it's not all of them will always click, but whatever ones do, you know, they're your blessings in disguise. I think they're the ones that you can run with. So one of the questions I've got in there is also for those tuning in, it's like, okay, I've got my values And potentially, you know, there are opportunities where, you know, we described this before, the moral versus the practical. And, you know, the advice is to, hey, like, honor your values. Please honor your values. In there, does that take some level of reimagination? Probably, you know, we've heard about the phoenix and the fire, and but there is some level of persistence required. Is there a call to persistence in there as well, Pat?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I make a distinction. I teach a philosophy formula class. I have this group, and I come up with the philosophy of something every month. And one module was the philosophy of contradiction versus paradox. They're not the same thing, although they might look like the same thing sometimes. You know, because contradictions are literally things that self-negate. And they're important to identify, because if you do solve them, you evolve. And that's what, you know, paradoxes and contradictions have in common. Paradoxes are things that you integrate, because, you know, in other words, it seems like they seem contradictory, but if you can figure out how to bring them together, you evolve also. So it's another doorway to evolution. So what's interesting is that persistence, to me, is a little bit paradoxical. And I say that because I used to say, you know, I used to always quote that thing, you know, persistence and determination alone are omnipotent, right? And that way, you know, you're persisting, and you have that endurance to persist. And now I have a premise, and the premise is persistence is a virtue until it isn't. And having taken businesses and driven them persistently for a period of time, a lot of times there's a persistence, and then there's a breakthrough, and wow, okay, we persisted and we got there. And then other times there's persistence, and there's bleeding, and there's, you know, there's all this havoc that's wreaked, and the consequence of which is that suddenly you end up in an exhaustive failure. So so now, of course, what's about, you know, how do you know when persistence is no longer a virtue? And that's called nobody knows, but you mastery in my mind is when you start to be able to identify those things,
subtleties.
Yeah, it was just knowing when to do what, you know. I guess what kind of goes maybe along with this is one of the things that I teach is the make let paradox. And I say that sometimes in life you have to make things happen. Sometimes in life you have to let things happen. And the master of life knows when to do which. And that's the whole thing, saying, do I make this? Do I keep persisting here, or should I just kind of let this happen now? And when I was younger, I was all about making it happen no matter what. And that was the persistence and the drive, et cetera. I'm older now. I'm a little wiser now. I have different mantras and prayers in my life about how I want to live it. My number one core value for myself in my early life was significance. And that meant that I had to be working on significant things, like that had to be at extraordinary levels, you know, and if I wasn't doing something significant to have massive impact and to change the world, I was never, so no matter how much I accomplished, I was never really feeling fulfilled, because there's always more significant things to do. That was hazardous for me in many respects. And as I went through transitions and maturations in my life, I replaced, and a lot of this was mindfulness practice, but I replaced significance with fulfillment. Now I just want personally to be fulfilled. I want to be able to look at that dew on a blade of grass after my meditation in the morning and cry because it's so beautiful, even if it's not significant. And the irony is that once I adopted, I changed that core value, and it shows how changing values can really impact things. I literally consciously adopted fulfillment as my number one core value from significance. My success grew so startlingly fast as far as reaching levels I never did before, that more significant things started to happen. So, it's very, very strange. So I guess, you know, I'm saying this because I believe persistence is a necessary virtue. And I also believe that there's stages of life and career that require persistence in very significant ways. However, I do believe that that as you evolve in your life, and you know, you talk about inspired evolution, you know, is the name of this thing, and that the whole concept of evolution is that when you've learned the lessons of persistence, I believe that persistence becomes less necessary.
I love that. The make let paradox. It's like control and surrender. It's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that, man. I really appreciate that. One of the things that I will not let you go without talking about is you made a quick statement in your TED talk about the fact that what makes us different to animals, like obviously there's a lot, but or potentially not that much. I don't know. We are animals at the end of the day. But one of the interesting things that makes us different is that we get to choose our purpose. And it was like, you know, I had that moment where, you know, like I felt like I was the six strings of a guitar and you went ring, and I was just like, ah. So can you tell us a little bit about that, man?
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know if there's a question in there. I just want to revel in it.
So. I love your question. That statement in that talk, I said, acknowledging that we are animals, but what makes us different than other forms of animal on the planet is the fact that we can choose a purpose. A dog cannot choose a purpose for its life. If it could, it probably would not be living with you.
I choose not to believe it. No, listen, I heard you say that, and I was
dog
like,
lover, oh, damn it. Damn it.
Pretty sure she loves me. But I great way to make a point. I got it.
Of course, I'm saying that tongue in cheek. A cow not choose a purpose for its life, or could there be no such thing as McDonald's, right? So the idea is that what makes us unique as human beings is that we have this capacity for abstract conceptualization. We can think about our lives. We can think about our ancestors that came before us. We could think about a vision of the future that doesn't even exist right now that we can play a role in creating. All this, what it boils down to, is that we can choose a purpose. That's what makes us unique. However, the vast, vast majority of human beings have not chosen a purpose for their life. They live in survival mode. So, you know, our many self-help gurus promulgate a philosophy of psychology or human motivation that this is like very popular behaviorist in the turn of, you know, of the 19th century into 20th century. And basically their premise was that mankind lives in the seeking of pleasure and the avoidance of pain. So this is the so-called pain pleasure principle. So they basically tried to describe human nature in the context of seeking pleasure and avoiding pain. And when they give examples, like, you know, you would do this because you wanted to avoid pain. You did this because you were seeking pleasure, so that your life is almost, you're this automaton that is seeking pleasure, avoiding pain, and that's the motive forces of your life. And then that got translated into the self-development, you know, success-oriented movement, and people would get up, you know, and talk and promulgate pain pleasure principle. And I heard it, and there was a logic to it, but intuitively I said, there's something dehumanizing about that as a premise. And I went to work thinking about it. And then I realized, well, wait a minute, where does purpose fit into that? Because if you have a compass setting that says I'm moving in this direction, call it your true north, and I'm going in that direction, in that journey, I'm going to experience pain, but I'm going to continue. If I have a purpose, I'm still going through the pain because I want to go in that direction. And then as I'm continuing, there's going to be pleasure along the way too. Pain and pleasure will always come on an alternating basis in everybody's life. So the only constant companion in my mind should be purpose. Purpose is always there. Sometimes there's pain, sometimes there's pleasure, but your constant companion is purpose. So I believe that in order to have a fully human experience, you have to be purpose driven. You have to have a constant sense of purpose in your life, know that purpose, and move in the direction of that purpose. And that's what will prevent you from chasing blinky, shiny things and going off track and avoiding pain and seeking pleasure. Animals, a dog lives pain, pleasure. You know, any animal lives pain, pleasure. They're seeking pleasure, avoiding pain. They're living in what's called survival mode. Mm-hmm. And the majority of human beings are also living in survival mode. And it's my conclusion on it is that if you're not purpose-driven, you're living a subhuman experience. You're not actually having the human experience. You're having an experience that's relegated to other species of animals.
Okay, so as the purpose coach, I'm going to take that extract and make that the trailer to everything that I do.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for sharing that, because ultimately, like, and what I'm hearing in there also is, and this has been true from my own experience in life and where the whole journey around purpose came from for me, was, you know, the fact that the pleasure that comes from being on your purpose, you know, you talked about fulfillment, is it's very different to a happiness.
Right.
You know, it's this nourishing inner kind of joy that you get, and it's not easy, right, in the normal sense of the word, but there's a joy in there. And one of the most amazing things I personally find as well is there are so many challenges when you're walking out on your purpose, and you can associate that to pain, but you find yourself rolling up your sleeves and going, yeah, let's get in there, let's have a look at that, and let's really work on it. And it's like, wow, I'm really going into my pain, or I'm really, you know, and it's like, ah, my purpose is driving me there. And it's like, wow, the grace with which I get to navigate this thanks to purpose is just, yeah, it's, I dedicated my life to it, basically. Talking about dedicating your life, brother, what is your purpose?
To enliven humanity.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. Man, Pat, there is so much more that I would love to talk to you about. I want to honor the time and the podcast here today. I want to give you my deepest heartfelt thanks for your time and energy for being here, man. And also, I know it's not just today that we get to talk about all of this. It's a lifetime's work that you've put into yourself, into this conversation, the way you're showing up in the world, the books you've written, the films you've made, the work you've done on others. Brother, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. It's been a great pleasure to be with you. And even though we're virtual, you have such an extraordinary expressive ability that I feel like I'm in the room with you right now. It's amazing.
Touch wood. Thank you. Thank you to those tuning in, Inspired Evolution Tribe Community. Love you guys so much. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode. I know you got so much out of it. As always, whatever's ripe and pressing for you, leave us a comment below. That's me directing literally myself talking back to you in the comment section below. And on behalf of myself and the Inspired Evolution Tribe, everybody tuning in, Pat, wishing you all the best on your journey, brother.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening in to another amazing episode of the Inspired Evolution. If you're loving these episodes, make your way across to YouTube, click subscribe. Fresh episodes are launched every Monday with highlights being released throughout the week. Thank you so much. And hey guys, just so you know, a lot of love, heart, soul, and work goes into these episodes. So if you could, please leave us a 5-star review and comment on iTunes. I love reading your positive feedback. It fans the flames of the passion to continue to create and help you live the life that you love. Thank you so much for your wonderful feedback. I can't wait to see you again in the next episode. Big love from Amrit. And remember to stay inspired to evolve.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape.
And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.